Good evening. Welcome to the regular monthly meeting of the City of Atlanta Board of Ethics. The board is an independent, citizen-nominated board that works to ensure honesty, integrity, accountability, and trust in city government. The board administers and enforces the Code of Ethics by interpreting the city's ethical standards, administering the financial disclosure program, investigating ethics complaints, and determining if ethics violations have occurred. The board meets every third Thursday of the month at 6 o'clock p.m. in City Council Committee Room 1. Ethics questions or complaints may be submitted via email to ethicsofficer@atlantaga.gov or by phone at 404-330-6286. The board is composed of 7 city residents nominated by a public interest group and confirmed by the City Council to serve a 3-year term of office. All board members are community volunteers who receive no pay for their service. We at this time have one vacant position that will be nominated by the Metro Atlanta Chamber of Commerce. On the board, we do have 2 seats to my right, Nicola Hines, nominated by the League of Women Voters. To my immediate left, Jessica Stern, nominated by the Atlanta Bar Association, who also serves as vice chair of the board. To my far left, Todd Gray, nominated by the Atlanta Business League. And to my immediate right, Jerry Newmark, nominated by the Atlanta Planning Advisory Board. My name is Kate Wash. I was nominated by the 6 major universities. Assisting the board this evening is Ethics Officer Jabu Sangoba, who is seated on my far right. And we do have a quorum tonight. So we will begin with the first order of business, and that is review and adoption of the minutes of our previous meeting, March 15, 2018.
I move that we adopt the last meeting minutes.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you. All in favor of adopting the minutes of the March 15, 2018 meeting, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Those minutes are approved as submitted. Next item on the agenda is the matter of Cortez Carter, case CO-17-008. Probable cause report, Ms. Sangoba.
Yes, good evening, board members. I will be presenting that probable cause report with my recommendations in regards to this matter. Okay. So our office initiated this complaint against former city employee Cortez Carter on about November 30th, 2017. And the basis of that complaint was potential conflicts of interest regarding his role as Deputy General Manager for the Department of Aviation with Hartsfield-Jackson International Airport. And the basis of that complaint was his spouse's interest in the company Airworks. And so our complaint alleged potential violations of Atlanta City Code Section 28112, which governs participation of contracts in contracts, and Section 2813 on disclosure of interest. Mr. Carter was represented by counsel, however, and we did give him notice of this hearing. However, as you can see, his counsel is not here this evening. And his counsel was provided with an official copy of the probable cause report. First, I'll go ahead and highlight the findings of our investigation. So our office did do a thorough investigation into this matter, which included interviewing several witnesses as well as looking at documents and evidence. Based on our investigation, we first learned that the spouse of Cortez Carter, Charisse Works, founded the concessions company Airworks. That company became a 10% minority partner in a Chick-fil-A restaurant at the Reagan International Airport in Washington, D.C. in July 2015 with Hojej Brand Foods. Hojej is a nationwide airport concessions company with a standing presence at the Atlanta Airport. However, we found no evidence that Airworks had any ties to any of the concessions contracts held by Hojej at the Atlanta Airport or any other company for that fact. Now, former General Manager Miguel Southwell first hired Carter in September of 2015 as Assistant General Manager, and he was hired to lead the Atlanta Business Ventures Division of Atlanta Airport. And based on our investigation and interviews, at that time, Carter's job responsibilities did not include any involvement in retail airport concessions due to his wife's relationship with Hojej. Now, in May of 2017, Carter was, I would say, informally assigned the duties of the Commercial Development Division, which did involve overseeing concessions. In September 2017, Carter was officially promoted to Deputy General Manager of the airport. Our investigation also found that city personnel did personally meet with Carter's wife, Cherise Works, at airport revenue conferences. There were two conferences, and there were some that did know of her company, AirWorks. Now, in terms of looking at the ethics code, based on the facts and applying that to the code, we first looked at Section 812. Now, that does provide that prohibits employees from participating directly or indirectly in any contract solicitations or proposals in which they should know they may have a financial or personal interest. Now, our code defines financial interest as any interest where there is a monetary or material benefit to the employee as well as to the employee's immediate family. And by immediate family, we would say sibling, spouse, mother, father. Now, a personal interest is more focused on relationships. So you may have a personal interest even if there's no financial interest involved. And that focuses on relationships, whether they are from immediate family or a business partnership or association. Based on our findings, we determined that Carter had a financial and personal interest due to his wife's, AirWorks business relation with Hojej. However, we found no evidence of improper influence from Carter during the time which he oversaw concessions that would have benefited Hojej. Now, there's another important code section that we looked at, which was Section 2813. That code section requires employees to disclose any conflict of interest when they may have a financial or personal interest in any decision pending before them or their agency. And that disclosure must be done online through the city's electronic filing system, the system which is similar. We do other reports such as the personal city financial disclosure statement, which is done annually, as well as reporting of travel disclosure reports and gift reports. So that is a system that will be required to file that report. Based on our findings, we determined that Carter failed to properly disclose his financial and personal interests as required by Section 2813 during the time he was tasked with overseeing concessions, which we determined was only from June 2017 until November 2017. That said, our recommendation is that that probable cause does exist that he failed to disclose his interest in the company AirWorks, again, due to his wife's relationship with Hojej. However, because Carter is no longer serving as the deputy general manager, is he no longer employed by the city, his relationship with AirWorks no longer presents a conflict. And therefore, we're recommending that the matter be closed. Going forward, we also would recommend that the Department of Aviation notify the ethics office or really the ethics officer of any potential conflicts that may arise. And that is the recommendation of this office, and I'll take any questions you may have.
Ms. Angova, I see that there's a lot of effort to make this as clear as possible, but mm-hmm. I have to admit I'm still a little confused about what the recommendation is as far as which section of the code was violated, because I see that there was an investigation for a violation of Section 2813, disclosure of interests, and then 2814, undisclosure of financial interests.
There's no violation under that code section. Okay. If you, there is no violation in that code section.
Okay, so that was found that to be no violation of...
Well, we never brought that violation to begin with. The reason why it's referenced in the report was because there was some confusion as to whether or not there was a violation under Section 2814, which governs disclosure of your personal financial interests. So that was the reason why it was important that we put in this report that he did accurately say no on the question, which is whether he had any family member or any other relationships where there was a direct business relationship with the city. So, for example, if AirWorks had a concessions business or in some kind of relationship with someone here at the airport, it's very clear that AirWorks is not, there is no business with here at the airport. The business is in Washington, D.C. So that's the reason why the basis for this being referenced in the report.
Okay, so then following that, then the recommendation is that there's a finding of probable cause that there was a violation of the requirement to disclose a conflict of interest.
Correct.
Right? Okay. And then to make sure I understand the allegation correctly, the claim is that the conflict of interest,
which is the financial and personal interests in AirWorks because of the business relationship with AirWorks and Hojej.
Right, yes. But the information that we have, and I just want to make sure I'm reading this right, is that because AirWorks has 10% interest in a company that's jointly owned by HBF, and because mm-hmm. HBF has received contracts at the Atlanta airport.
They do have contracts. Okay.
That's the conflict of interest because there's a 10% ownership in one part of one of their businesses.
Well, the focus is not really on the 10%. Whether it's 10%, 50%, 90%, the issue is that there is a personal and financial interest held by Carter himself because AirWorks is a business held by his wife. Because we're talking about immediate family members. So whether AirWorks had a 50% interest with Hojej, it would still be a potential conflict because he still has a personal financial interest due to his wife's relationship with Hojej.
But is there any evidence that we have of AirWorks having any particular partial interest of HBF?
There's a 10% interest. Again, the focus is not the amount of the interest. The fact is that there's a business relationship with AirWorks, and we do have evidence that there is interest between AirWorks and Hojej.
And I just want to make sure I'm understanding it correctly.
Mm-hmm.
So as
no
an
problem.
Example, if Kate and I both have two separate businesses that we own, but we decide to go in on a separate business together and I decide to put 10% ownership in this third business that we go into together, it doesn't mean that I have any ownership of Kate's first business.
But she has a business relationship. There's a business relationship between Cherise Works Company, AirWorks, and Hojej. Whether it's 10% or 20 or 30%, there's still a business relationship between the two.
If I can jump in here, I think that the problem is not the ownership exactly. It is that there is a business relationship so that, you know, you might have reason to help me in, going back to your example, you might have reason to help me out because then it might ultimately benefit the third business. I think that,
well, and
so
it's a
relationship,
I think it's more
issue.
Of the. So here's the thing: if let's say you use your example where you and Kate were just friends or associates, but here we have a husband and a wife. So that by virtue of the code, the immediate family kicks in, which says that yeah, this is your wife, and whether it's a 10% interest or 50% interest, this is your wife. So there's a financial interest because there's going to be a benefit to you. Because this is your wife's business. Under the definition of the code, we're going by the definition of the code. And there's also a personal interest because your wife has a business relationship with Hojej. So it's like two-prong.
I just want to, I'm sorry, I just want, you know, Just to clarify, because when we do, when the city of Atlanta does put out bids, it does put out bids to larger concessionaires such as HBF and et cetera. So when you already have a business relationship, regardless of what airport, there's a certain percentage of your contract that has to go through ACB DBE. So here's the conflict that lies within it, because considering that AirWorks is already a certified ABC DBE, that could be potentially a conflict because of his relationship with his wife in awarding future contracts, which HBF, because they can turn around and say, hey, we've won contract on Concourse F, and then since you helped us, it could be a quick pro quo, you know, type of situation. Since you helped us because your husband is overseeing contracts and who comes into the airport, we're now going to allow you to open up a Chick-fil-A and on Concourse F, you know, just to give you an example of something hypothetically. So that's where the conflict of interest comes from. And he didn't disclose that conflict of interest, which he should have abstained or walked away from that particular anything that had to deal with HBF and renewing contracts. There are multiple contracts that are out right now, or multiple RFPs out for the airport and during this time frame, which is what made it, you know, very visible, because there's multiple that came out in 2017 that HBF went for new business, and he didn't disclose during that time frame of that. So that's where the conflict of interest, because he could have stepped away from reviewing or anything of that sort when it comes to new business.
One other little part I just want to make sure I understand too is, in the first part of the investigation, I thought I read that there was a discussion with the person who interviewed Mr. Carter about the fact that his wife had an interest.
That's correct.
And so when we're saying there wasn't disclosure of the fact that there was a conflict of interest, how do we match that up with the fact that it was shared with his employer at that time?
Well, at the time he was employed, he was not employed to oversee any concessions. And we found that he was not involved in concessions until June 2017. The disclosure, if you want to call it that, because I would dispute that it was an actual disclosure, because he was not actually involved at the time. And his employer at the time, Southwell, made sure he was not involved in any concessions. He chose to be involved in concessions after June, and so he had the responsibility to file that disclosure report. And if you notice also from the report, he took great lengths to explain to us that he was familiar with the ethics rules. In fact, when he came from Chicago, he was familiar with the ethics rules. So he knew our office. He'd been through ethics training. So he did have that responsibility to file the disclosure form.
The requirements to file the form as a disclosure rather than saying,
I'm not saying that it's not a requirement to disclose to his department. What I'm saying is that, and I do believe, and which is why we put in the report, that there were city personnel that knew that he had that relationship with AirWorks, but nonetheless, he took the role. He decided he was going to take such a significant role and involvement in concessions, and he did not contact our office. We had no conversation with him or anyone else about his role.
Required in the code section is specifically a disclosure form.
Correct.
To the ethics office. And so if that's not submitted, then there's a violation, regardless of whether you report it to your office directly.
I can only speak to the code, correct.
Right. Do we have that in here, the code language?
The disclosure, the conflict, it's in there, yes. It's in the report. It says, if you look under 19 of the report, it says, requires employees to disclose any conflict of interest arising when they know or should know they have a financial personal interest in any decision. And it says, as of June 2006, this is based on the ordinance, the disclosure must be made by filing the online disclosure of interest form, conflict of interest form, in the city's electronic filing system. And this is posted to our website. No problem.
Thank you. have a question. What are the ramifications of finding probable cause and yet then dropping the case because he's no longer an employee?
I wouldn't characterize it as dropping it, more or less closing the matter, because if he was still employee, the remedy would have been, having a conversation where he would no longer be able to serve in that role, because I don't necessarily believe that recusal would have been a viable option given the significance of that role of overseeing concessions. But he's no longer here and serving the role, so there's pretty much nothing we could do with the matter.
So even if we find probable cause, that's as far as we can go? Is that what you're saying?
That would be my recommendation. And that's not, we've handled cases similar to that. So I was very consistent with the recommendation with past cases and how we've handled it similar to this.
I do have a question. Does the probable cause goes into any personnel files or anything? If it's found, even though we're not doing any formal action, so if he does apply or do anything else with the City of Atlanta in the future?
I would definitely leave that to the board's discretion.
All right, any further questions on this? Anyone? All right. I would like then either a motion. Let's start with maybe a motion to adopt the recommendation as presented, and we can then discuss further. Or if somebody wants to substitute a different action.
Motion that we adopt it as accepted.
All right. Thank you. Is there a second? It's just for discussion. It's not a vote. Thank you. All right, so we have a motion and a second to adopt the recommendation presented by the ethics officer in this instance. Is there further discussion of this? Because what they are recommending is that we find probable cause, but that we would then not proceed further with the case because the subject is no longer an employee of the city. Right.
I would like to recommend that we do put a note in his personnel file indicating that the reason that the case was closed is that he is no longer an employee.
Any further amendments offered to that recommendation? Okay. Would you like to offer a substitute motion then?
Yes, I would like to move that we accept the recommendation with the addition of entering a note in the personnel file to indicate that the reason why this particular case was closed.
Okay. Is there a second to that motion?
Second.
Thank you. Any further discussion on that? Okay. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions?
Abstention.
Thank you.
And just for the record, we can prepare an order with that to that effect.
Yes, thank you. Please do that. All right. That concludes the enforcement piece. All right. On to cheerier things. So we're going to go ahead and recognize the boards and commissions with the best filing records. So, as you know, the Ethics Code requires all city elected officials, some employees, and some citizen volunteers to annually file a financial disclosure form in which they disclose their business interests, property interests, and sources of income above $5,000. And this allows members of the public to be alerted to potential and actual conflicts of interest of people who are acting on behalf of the City of Atlanta. Furthermore, this important process builds the public's trust in open and transparent government. The departments with the best filing records for 2018 are Atlanta Fire Rescue, Atlanta Information Management, the City Auditor's Office, City Council, Department of City Planning, the Department of Corrections, Department of Finance, the Department of Law, the Department of Parks and Recreation, the Office of the Solicitor and WorkSource Atlanta. We also have Atlanta Municipal Court, the Department of Aviation, the Department of Procurement, the Executive Offices, and the Department of Watershed Management. So we had 48 boards, commissions, and task forces who were 100% compliant with the financial disclosure requirements, which I certainly hope includes this board. Yes, okay. At this time, we would like to look at, do I have a resolution?
Sorry, it's one in the package. It should be behind tab 3.
Yes. So we have a resolution presented to us for adoption that would.
And you don't. I don't think you have to read it since you read the.
I'm not going to read it. but I want to see if we have a motion to adopt this resolution as presented to us that will recognize the departments with the best filing records for 2018.
I move that we adopt the resolution as presented.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Second.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Any abstentions? All right, so in conclusion, the Board of Ethics seeks to build and support a strong culture of ethics in the city. Further, we recognize that it takes all of us working together to foster an open and transparent government. So we are very pleased to recognize the departments with the best filing records for 2018. Next item, a report to the board on the 2018 filing season. Ms. Dawson. Pretty sure it's you.
Okay. Good evening, members of the board. This evening, I will give you a summary of our 2018 financial disclosure filing season. This year, we had a total of 2,879 required financial disclosure filers, and out of that 2,879 filers, we had 2,525 city employees and 354 boards and commissions to file. We had a timely filing number of 2,729, and 2,404 of those were employees and 325 were boards. We had, this was an increase of filers from last year of 134. This year we had a 95% filing rate, which was great, and this was extended, the filing deadline was extended through April 23rd due to a cyber incident. Now, this rate is comparable to the ones in the previous years, whereas in 2017, we had a 96% filing rate, and we had 2,745 filers. In 2016, we had a 94% filing rate, and in 2015, it was slightly lower at 92%, just to compare some of the filing rates we've had over the years. Some strategies that we've used to assist us with reaching this goal this year, we had to use our existing system because we were scheduled to roll out a new e-filing system, but due to unforeseen challenges, that was unable to happen this year. So we used the existing system, and we had no problems to report using that system. We conducted two e-filing days, one citywide and one with boards, NPU and APAB, and we had 42 filers to complete their filing on that date. We sent out email reminders, made personal phone calls. We assisted walk-ins as well as over-the-phone filers to assist them with completing their statements in a timely manner. And this year, for the first time, we utilized the city's visual monitor that's located in the atrium to broadcast the information concerning the filing period. And, of course, we also continue to work with our liaisons in the departments and boards We assist them by getting reports to them or any other assistance that they needed from our office during the filing period. Without their efforts, we would not have been as successful as we are. And as stated earlier, lastly, we extended the filing deadline to give filers additional time because of the cyber incident. Now, the challenges we faced was, of course, first the cyber incident, which disrupted city operations and significantly impacted our work. We had a loss of city server. The city officials and employees could not use their computers, which is why we basically moved the filing deadline. And we were also unable to send out our mass emails and mass mailings like we usually do. But overall, we still had a pretty good filing season. Are there any questions?
Thank you. No questions. Thank you, Ms. Dawson.
Okay, thank you.
Next is the 2018 role of delinquent filers. Mr. Santiago.
Good evening, board members. So at this time, I'll present the 2018 role of delinquent filers. The role is located behind tab 3 in your board packets. I think it's towards the back, the last section. This role is sorted by last name and includes both non-filers and late filers, as well as current and former employees and board members. As Sherry mentioned, due to the cyber attack, we extended the deadline to file the 2018 statement to April 9th, with the grace period to file without penalty extended to April 23rd. The late filers on the roll filed their statements after the aforementioned grace period ended on April 23rd, and to date have not provided our office with reasonable cause for doing so. The non-filers on this list have failed to file their statements or provide our office with reasonable cause. In addition, we have reviewed this list and the roll of filers thoroughly to determine that all individuals listed on the roll received adequate notice to file their statements this year. With that said, we respectfully ask the board to adopt the 2018 roll of delinquent filers. I'll take any questions you may have.
All right, any questions for Mr. Santiago? Then we need to, I need a motion to adopt the roll of delinquent filers, please.
So moved.
And a second.
Second.
Thank you. All right. All in favor of adopting the 2018 roll of delinquent filers as presented to us, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Thank you, Mr. Santiago. We
Thank
have
you, Madam
now
Chair.
Adopted that roll of delinquent filers. Next item is a formal advisory opinion on a request from Mr. Ben Howard. Ms. Sangova, you're...
Yes, Chair. I believe Mr. Howard is here. Mr. Howard?
Greetings, members of the board and staff members, and greetings to you folks who are watching the Ethics Board in action. I present to you for consideration that there is the Sunshine Laws, and people take an oath to abide by state law. Council members take an oath to abide by state law, and that they consider legislation that comes from the neighborhood planning system. And I propose that I submit that council members violate their oath when they accept legislation from neighborhood planning units that are not in accord and with the steps and the provisions of state law. Now, it's kind of fuzzy the way I presented it, but is there any questions as to my intent?
So, Mr. Howard, thank you for coming here tonight. We did review your requests, and I know you're here today to discuss it now. I did speak with the law department, and have you spoken with anyone there?
No.
Okay, so
I have a reason why, but finish your sentence.
No problem, sir. So your request really deals with the matters that are not handled by the Ethics Board. And so you, this, the matters that you're referencing, you need to speak with someone in the law department, and I can follow up with one of the attorneys there, because we do not have jurisdiction over your request.
Okay. What did the law department say to you, other than that you shouldn't handle this?
Actually, that's not what they said, sir, but I did explain to them that we did receive your request, and I would present it to the board.
Okay. Well, one of the reasons why I did not contact the law department was because Steve Carr, a member of the Atlanta Planning Advisory Board, was removed from his position summarily and unilaterally by the president of the Atlanta Planning Advisory Board at that time. Steve Carr submitted a complaint to the, well, he submitted a request to the Atlanta Planning Advisory Board for a copy of the executive committee minutes wherein he was removed. He did not receive those minutes. After a prolonged period of time, he complained to the state attorney general. The state attorney general contacted the law department and said to the law department, "We received a complaint from a Mr. Steve Carr. Would you look into the matter?" The law department went to the planning department and said to the planning department, "We received the state attorney general has received a complaint from Mr. Steve Carr. It has been passed on to us and for us to contact you to see what you plan to do about it." Planning department said, essentially, "Oops, we have not given sufficient training in the Open Records Act, but we will do so." The law department went back to the state attorney general and said, "The planning department has promised to give training in the Open Records Act." And so the state attorney general wrote a letter to Steve Carr saying, on the basis of the promise that they got through the law department from the Office of Planning that training would be provided, we dismiss your case. I'm only give one instance where neighborhood planning units don't abide by state law, and this is one of the simplest. State law says that outside this room there needs to be posted the agenda. There are other provisions, but that's the simplest, and they refuse to do that. But I will give the second about that executive committee minutes. To this day, even though I have complained more than one time, the executive committee minutes of the meeting whereby Steve Carr was removed from office have not yet been presented to Steve Carr, and that's why I don't think I want to contact the law department. But what bothers me is that I not heard the phrase again tonight. What a culture, we're dealing with culture. And if our ethics code can't correct a culture that helps folks to at will violate state law, then we have to do something more about this culture, I suspect. And that's my comment on that topic tonight. Thank you.
Mr. Howard, thank you for coming, and your concerns are clear, and it seems like there is a law in place to cover some of those concerns, and if it was specific in our ethics code, then it's something that we would be happy to review, but it seems like there's a more appropriate venue for that, right? I mean, it's not something that's covered because it's covered in state law.
It's not covered in the ethics code, oddly enough, which addresses very specific things that our employees and board members are supposed to do, but does not actually specifically address violations of state law.
Just a point of information. When did this event happen?
Yes, Professor Newmark. It happened about a year and a half ago at the first 6 months of Jennifer Freeman's tenure.
And Mr. Carr has not yet been reinstated?
That's correct. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Howard. But again, as Ms. Sungoba said, this is unfortunately not within our jurisdiction, and we cannot address it. Yes, sir.
On the ethics officer's agenda, and probably on yours too, is a report due to the Atlanta, I mean the City of Atlanta Committee on Council about what can be done to improve our ethics code. So if the ethics officer isn't ready now to present a finding that the code could be improved in that regard, would this board might want to say that there should be a plank in our code that forces people to abide by state law?
Mr. Howard, you are talking matters that you need to take up with Committee on Council, but okay. I do not believe city law can, we could handle state matters. So you need to speak with somebody in law, and I can follow up with law after this meeting.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yeah, the concern is that the city can't tell the state what to do. I mean, it's a hierarchical problem. I'm sure you can understand.
Yeah, but we are not opposed to improvements to the ethics code. Let me say that for the record.
Of course we're not. So, all right. Thank you, Mr. Howard. And next is the ethics officer's report, Ms. Sungova.
Okay, I'm just going to highlight that there's a lot of activity on the board. We had a lot of activity in the past couple of months, but you can review most of it at your leisure. The few things I do want to point out, one of the things that we are working, hopefully wrap up by the end of this month, is the ethics study that we've been tasked to do on best practices as it relates to persons or entities doing business with the city, and we've been working very hard on that. We should hopefully have that complete shortly. Another thing I wanted to mention was that Mr. Santiago presented, it was your second time, correct, at the ACL Next Industry Day. It was very successful. They were happy with him and they wanted him back, and I think it's very critical that we're becoming more visible to airport vendors and contractors, so he did make that presentation during this time period as well. Our office, as long as the city auditor, has been tasked with independent review investigation of the bonuses, city bonuses, and we are working with that office on that. And one of the, I guess, most pressing things that happened during this time, and I believe Ms. Dawson talked about, was recovering from the cyber incident and meeting the demands of the 2018 filing season. It was quite challenging, but we did get through it, and we did fortunately meet our we surpassed what I thought we would in terms of our filing records. So, I just wanted to thank the staff. They've worked so hard these past few months, and it hasn't been an easy time, especially since we've been assigned other additional tasks. And I'll take any questions you have about the report.
No questions at this time. Thank you. Has anyone registered for public comment? Mr. Howard?
Oh, one more thing. Sorry. I wanted to finish up before we do that. As far as our budget, I did not... We are wrapping up our FY18 budget. Spending is expected. And we are working with, as all departments are, working with administration and the budget chief to get our FY19 budget set. And our budget hearing is scheduled for June 5th. So that's in June. And the budget hearings were essentially pushed back because of the cyber incident. So thank you.
I'm sorry, Mr. Howard, whenever you're ready. Thank you.
Right. Thank you very much. So greetings again to you and to the citizens of Atlanta. Ben Howard, senior advocate, public engagement enthusiast. Shun the very appearance of evil. That's essentially what you said in formal advisory opinion 2017-1 entitled Appearance of Impropriety. Friends, Romans, and countrymen, we have a problem right here in River City. In a city too busy to hate, some found time to participate in an ugly t-shirt contest. After budget soundings and a public vote on salaries and fringe benefits, some yielded to temptation and accepted, quote, bonuses, unquote. Others felt entitled to illegal consideration in the awarding of contracts. What then can really be said about the state of the city? The old ship of state is plowing through murky waters at the moment, yet there is hope. I urge you to revisit and revise FAO 2017-1. For starters, why not recommend the creation of a whistleblower fund where see something, say something, can mean something? The murkiness in Atlanta government can be dissipated by citizens providing impetus to the bright sunshine of open government laws. So let us let the sun shine in. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Howard. All right. Announcements. We do have a new Ethics Board member who's been nominated.
Yes, and Ms. Mika Anderson will be filling the seat of former board member Raya Greathouse, and she will be confirmed this Monday. She has confirmed that she will be there, and we're excited to have her, and you all have an opportunity to meet her, and I'm excited that we're going to have one less vacancy.
Thank you, yes. Fewer vacancies are always better. And then the board retreat, my understanding is that's scheduled for June 2nd. Is that still correct?
I think we'll have to discuss that offline. I'm okay. Not sure with the budget hearing being pushed back, and we'll see what everybody's
right.
schedules look like.
Around.
Correct.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Board members, anything further for the good of the order? All right. May I have a motion then to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Thank you very much. We are adjourned.